You're listening to Admitting Diagnosis, the Journal Watch podcast for the week ending December 5th. I'm Joe Elia. Admitting Diagnosis offers the week's essential medical news plus an interview. This week, we talk about generic versus proprietary drugs and their relative efficacy. If you'd like to comment, call 617-440-4374. Links for everything are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. All right, here are the top five medical headlines of the week. Don't get your vitamin D at the beach. In hypertension, ACE inhibitors plus calcium channel blockers beat ACEs and diuretics. New work hours for residents recommended by the Institute of Medicine. In patients with coronary artery disease, prescribe exercise to avoid depression. And finally, generics work, according to the evidence. Okay, some details. Getting your vitamin D through exposure to sunlight is a bad idea, warns the American Academy of Dermatology. To avoid the complications of exposure to all those ultraviolet rays, you know, cancer and such, head to the supplement shelf or eat fortified foods. Next, an industry-funded study, the ACCOMPLISH trial, finds that pairing an ACE inhibitor with a calcium channel blocker is better at avoiding cardiovascular events in hypertensive patients at high risk than pairing an ACE inhibitor with a diuretic. The study was done in over 11,000 such patients who were randomized to one of the two regimens. Those on ACE inhibitors plus calcium channel blockers, in addition to achieving the same drop in blood pressure as those paired with diuretics, had a lower rate of major cardiovascular events, roughly 10% versus roughly 12%. Next, residents' work hours. If you're a resident doing residential things, like, for instance, admitting patients and constantly praying for sleep, the trumpets have sounded. That's the Institute of Medicine you hear, recommending that you get more sleep, more time off, and be subject to fewer averaging games than you've been playing. The question is, does the ACGME hear the trumpets too? Whatever happens, it looks like some of you will be getting a little more sleep, and your patients will be a little safer. Fancy that. Next, patients with stable coronary artery disease can develop depressive symptoms, which can be a harbinger of further cardiovascular trouble. In the Heart and Soul study, how much time do people waste coming up with these catchy, kitschy names? In the Heart and Soul study, he repeated, about 1,000 outpatients with stable coronary disease had their behavioral and biological covariates looked at. Those with the lowest levels of physical activity had the highest risks for cardiovascular events, an association that stood the test of multivariate analysis. The lesson? Get your patients moving. Finally, the story that's the subject of our interview this week. Details just ahead. Here is our interview. Earlier this week, JAMA published a systematic review and meta-analysis on the clinical equivalence between proprietary and generic versions of the principal cardiovascular drugs. The authors examined the literature of the past quarter century for evidence of non-equivalence between the versions, finding about 50 relevant articles. The studies dealt mostly with beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, diuretics, and warfarin. No differences were found in their clinical effects. In an analysis of editorial commentary on the topic, the authors found about half the commentators expressed doubts on clinical equivalence. We've asked Aaron Kesselheim, the paper's first author, to talk with us about his findings and their implications. Dr. Kesselheim is an internist practicing at Brigham and Women's Hospital, Boston. Thank you for talking with us this morning, Dr. Kesselheim.
My pleasure.
I'm surprised that the study was necessary at this stage in medical history. Aren't people on board with the idea that the same molecule packaged by different organizations would have the same clinical effect?
Actually, there's a lot of misperceptions out there about the safety and efficacy of generic drugs. Generic drugs can be a very useful part of a physician's treatment plan. Studies show that generic drugs reduce costs, and a number of studies show that generic drugs improve patient adherence to important treatment plans and prescriptions. which obviously can hopefully lead to improved patient outcomes. Despite that, and despite that massive evidence, there's a common view among physicians and patients that brand name drugs are somehow superior to generic drugs. That view has been frequently found in media reports and television advertisements, and this perception provides a hurdle to appropriate generic drug prescription, particularly among lower income patients.
True. And what do you think is the source of this doubt?
Well, there could be a number of reasons, and this is all postulating because we didn't look at this specifically in our manuscript, but brand name drugs are frequently advertised in the news and on television, whereas nobody advertises for generic drugs. And so that disconnect in terms of the amount of advertising that one sees for a brand name drug and a generic drug might be contributing to it. There might be a sort of subconscious association of the word generic with something that is for some reason lower quality. A lot of people hear the word generic but associate it with generic cornflakes or generic paper towels.
Those products all seem to work too.
which work, but you know, some people consider them to be lesser quality.
Yeah.
Whereas a generic drug has the same active ingredient as a brand name drug and has been approved by the FDA, and the manufacturers that make generic drugs have their manufacturing practices reviewed by the FDA, just like brand name drugs. So, you know, there could be, and you know, I'm sure there are, you know, as I said, there are news reports and other reports in the lay media that cast doubt on the safety and efficacy of generic drugs, and I think all of those things probably have something to do with that, with adding to that misperception.
Well, that would be fine, except about half the editorialists that because you actually did two studies. You did one study of the meta-analysis of these drugs and looking for any non-equivalence, and you didn't really find any. And then you did an analysis of editorial opinions about those drugs, and I was surprised that half the editorials, as you characterized it, expressed some doubts about the equivalence of drugs between generics and proprietary.
And we were surprised as well to find that extent of a substantial number of physician commentators expressing this point of view. Our thoughts for that is that physicians are not immune from the same sort of subconscious and psychological factors that might affect their patients, on the one hand, and we also suggested that maybe these physicians are writing from personal or anecdotal evidence rather than from an evaluation of the evidence in general and the evidence from clinical trials. Or that physicians, these sort of editorials and commentaries might be arising from physicians who have financial ties to pharmaceutical, brand name pharmaceutical companies. All of those things could be possibilities. We didn't find enough evidence to point to one or the other, but we suggested that those are all valid reasons for what we thought was a surprising finding as well.
I see. So you suspect that one of the reasons, or the two reasons might be, that editorialists often are offering opinion as opposed to analyzing the facts, and so they may preface something by saying, you know, the famous "in my clinical experience," but on the other hand, there are people with ties to drug companies who, consciously or not, may express skepticism and may couch that in terms of my drug company has a better quality control procedures than your generic drug company.
Those are all possibilities. And what we did was we sort of suggested as one of the conclusions of the article that perhaps medical journals could be more careful about publishing commentaries and editorials based on available data rather than necessarily based on anecdotal reports, because, you know, these commentaries and editorials appearing in medical journals obviously carry a lot more authority amongst practicing physicians than, you know, reports in the lay media. And so we feel like medical journals should have a heightened responsibility in ensuring that editorials and commentaries, even though they're editorials and commentaries, still do reflect the evidence bases out there in the science.
Did you find evidence of these opinions, Aaron, in the principal weeklies, for instance, in New England Journal of Medicine, JAMA? Did you find it in Annals of Internal Medicine, in Lancet? Did you find it in those big journals?
We found these editorials in a wide range of journals, from some of the major cardiovascular journals. I don't recall the specific journals off the top of my head. I don't have the article in front of me, but there are the editorials were found in a wide range of journals, from journals overseas, but also in American journals and in some of the major heart journals and some of the major internal medicine and other general practice journals.
Now, the sample of journals that you looked at to derive the data, they, as I said in the introduction, they spanned about a quarter century of opinion. Now, even 25 years ago, my sense was that people thought that generics and proprietary molecules had equivalent actions. But what if, let me just, make a theoretical question, pose a theoretical question. If you were to sample, say, the past 5 years as opposed to the past 25 years, do you think that editorial doubt will show some evaporation? Or do you think that, do you still see evidence that there is doubt out there?
Well, we actually did do that and looked at the editorials published between 2000 and 2008, and found a similar percentage of editorials still express that lack of confidence in the interchangeability of brand name and generic drugs used in cardiovascular disease. So, although we didn't do statistical testing to see if there is a trend over time in that particular area, we do think that perception remains to the more modern era.
And as you say, generic drug makers don't advertise it. In fact, if they did, their drugs would cost more. So there is no voice for the generic out there, and there is a rather loud voice saying, "Gee, you really should buy these kinds of jeans or this kind of paper towel because it's faster or it's better or something else." Let me ask you, what prompted the study? I mean, what you were, I'm imagining you sitting around one day as a fellow, and somebody coming up to you and saying, "Aaron, how'd you like to do this study?" Or was this a study that you got interested in doing on your own?
No, this was something that we came up with on our own. We're most interested in improving patient outcomes. I work here at Brigham and Women's Hospital, work in the Division of Pharmacoepidemiology, and we're interested in improving the optimal use of prescription drugs and improving patient outcomes. And we feel like generic drugs can be an important part of that process. And if prescribed where appropriate, can improve patient adherence. And there's a lot of data out there to show that, some of which arises from our group. But we have also noticed, as practicing physicians and through surveys of patients and physicians, that there still is a lot of misperceptions out there about the safety and efficacy of generic drugs. And so what we wanted to do was to look at what the evidence was underlying this view by systematically evaluating the studies published addressing differences in clinical outcomes, which we think are more that physicians and practicing physicians will consider to be the most relevant outcome, over the last approximately 25 years, and ultimately found that there's no evidence that brand name drugs used to treat cardiovascular disease are superior to generic drugs in their clinical outcomes.
If clinician today is approached by a patient and says, "I really want, we'll take this out of the drug realm. I really want Levi's as opposed to generic jeans." What kind of arguments can a clinician bring to an insistent patient that in fact the molecules are the same, the results ought to be the same?
Well, I think that doctors should indicate to patients that a generic drug has the same active ingredient, that it might, you know, differ in the color or the shape of the pill, but there's that there's no evidence that those slight differences translate to any clinical difference, that the FDA evaluates generic drug manufacturers and approves generic drugs, the safety and the quality of generic drugs, just as it does brand name drugs, and that generic drugs can save patients money and therefore allow patients to, especially patients who are on multiple medications or who are on medications that or who might not have the resources to pay for all of their medications, can, you know, help patients stay on important prescriptions that they need for their cardiovascular health.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they can also say that there's no evidence in the literature that suggests that brand name drugs are superior in clinical outcomes. Again, going back nearly 25 years, you know, this meta-analysis pooling all these studies together is fairly clear on that point.
Yeah. Well, what's without revealing any studies that you have in press anywhere, are you still pursuing this question? And can you give us a general shape of the research that you're pursuing in this area still?
Sure. So, you know, we are, you know, obviously continue to be interested in this question. And, you know, we do a lot of research looking at improving patient adherence to drugs in general, that are prescribed by their physician and that they need, and are interested in extending the sort of research that we did in the cardiovascular realm to other classes of drugs. So, you know, we think that there are a number of different ways that the research that we do can help ultimately add to the knowledge out there of ways to improve optimal drug prescribing and to ensure that patients are able to take the drugs that they need.
Especially in this economy.
Sure.
Well, Dr. Aaron Kesselheim, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
Finally this week, regular listeners will have noticed a certain huskiness to my voice this time out. I've got a cold, a common one. And if you have any remedies beyond chicken soup that are likely to work, I'm all ears and sinuses. If you'd like to leave a comment on this week's podcast or a cure for my common cold, call 617-440-4374. Links for all stories are available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where you will also find a collection of previous editions. The executive producer for Admitting Diagnosis is Adoriano. Join us next week, won't you? Thank you for listening. For the Journal Watch podcast, I'm Joe Elia.